Hello, and welcome to the Rooted in Reliability podcast, your plant performance podcast, where we dive deeper into asset management techniques and know-how. I'm your host, James Kovacic, and I will be your guide to achieving industry best practice. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is here to provide you with the insights to improve plant performance and deliver bottom-line results to your organization. In case you missed the last episode, you can find the Rooted in Reliability podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and on the reliability.fm network. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. Now let's dive into today's topic. It is my pleasure to welcome David Albrecht to the podcast. Welcome, David.
Thank you, James.
Now, David, you are an executive advisor on asset management at GHD. Prior to that, you have a tremendous amount of experience in asset management. Personally, I've had the opportunity to sit through some of your webinars and read your articles on a regular basis on asset management. You are known as a specialist, as a thought leader with asset management. Your asset management career spans at least 15 years that I'm aware of. What can you fill in on that brief bio that I may have missed?
Well, James, firstly, thank you for your kind words. I think that I've touched on asset management directly and indirectly over a 25-year period of my career. But more specifically, in terms of being devoted full-time to the core principles of asset management, I would say that's been the last 10 to 15 years of my career. The only thing really to add to that background is that I originally was focused principally on facilities as an asset class, but that has over the last decade been expanded to include all kinds of assets, be they roads, parks, bridges, rail track, etc. So it's I do believe I have a good exposure in my experience to a very wide variety of asset classes.
Excellent. Now, when we talk about asset management, what do we actually mean by asset management?
Excellent kickoff question, James. You know, you ask 100 different answers, but if we look to the ISO 55000 standard, it really says it's about the activity that an organization does to realize value from its assets. And the key word there is value. And I think that's value is a slippery concept. Not many people have a true grasp of what it is. I think a lot of people see value as being monetary value. They equate the two things together. And that is partially true, but it's not the whole picture. So let me just look at this concept of value. I think it's very important. The dictionary says that, if I recall, the definition of value is the worth of something. And worth of something can be both financial and non-financial. I want to quickly give you an example, because I think this may help. Let's use a railroad company as an example. I have two rail networks as clients. And to them, the value of their rail track can be measured by calculating how many millions of gross tons of freight travel over their track each year. And they use the metric million gross tons. Similarly, the same concept would apply if we're in a manufacturing plant. We're looking at perhaps our conveyor belts. But there's the non-financial side that I think is of value, which is really tricky and where people may not fully appreciate what asset management is trying to do when realizing value. Let me use the example of a municipality with a large park in the center of the city. The park has value connected to things like the aesthetics of the trees, the shade canopy that those trees provide, the oxygen that's created by those trees, how the trees help in managing and mitigating stormwater runoff. These are amazing values provided by the park and its trees, but these cannot be easily monetized. But we can certainly realize value. So to sum it up, it's about how we realize value from our assets, whether it's railroad track or parks and trees, across the spectrum of different assets, and how we realize value is so tremendously different depending on the asset class.
Excellent. I'm glad you brought up that difference between financial and non-financial values. I think that's important. When people hear asset management, they automatically go to return on assets, return on net assets, stuff like that. They don't think about the non-financial values that parks and other things bring. And I think that's important to understand, because that value is going to dictate how we manage those assets and those asset classes. Now, why is asset management important for organizations?
The one thing that really struck me with asset management, what really got me on board with the concept, is that I came to realize that asset management is really not about this utopian, idealistic world where money grows in trees. Asset management actually recognizes that we live in a constrained environment where we do not have sufficient budgets, we do not always have good quality data, our staff are not always motivated. There's a whole bunch of things constraining us. And the amazing thing about asset management is that it actually recognizes. It doesn't say you can optimize by having endless money or having perfect data. It actually recognizes that we're always going to make trade-offs. So back to your question about why is asset management important for organizations, it's about recognizing that we're making trade-offs all the time. We're trading off between cost, risk, and performance. We're trading off between the triple bottom line of people, planet, and prosperity, or between social, environmental, and economic criteria. This is our human condition. So asset management is important to organizations because it helps identify the trade-offs we're making. How significant are they, and how are we able to justify them and defend them against our organizational objectives? So that's why it's very important. And that's how I would address that question.
Excellent. Very good. I'm glad you brought up that balance, because you're right. In the real world, we don't have an unlimited amount of money. We don't have perfect data. We don't have all that stuff. So it is truly about driving that optimum performance for that organization, balancing cost, risk, and performance. Now, when they start to look at balancing cost, risk, and performance as part of the asset management, how does it force an organization to change?
Wow, that's a big question. And when I think of change, when I think of introducing asset management to an organization, I think of the concept of critical thinking. And critical thinking is really a way we as human beings reflect upon what we're doing as an organization. We analyze and we self-assess ourselves and our processes. We reflect. We become introspective. We have to recognize that we all get trapped in practices and habits and procedures that may not be optimal. So I think asset management forces us to become reflective, look back at what we're doing, think about how we can continually improve through incremental changes, even though there may be small changes, to get ourselves onto this journey of continual improvement. It's a little bit like taking a look in the mirror. You know, all of us have bad habits. I personally have bad habits that I'd love to change. Every year I make New Year's resolutions and I to them. But it's the same thing with organizations. We have to recognize that we have some bad habits and we have to find ways to move towards improving on our practices and our procedures. I like to think of it as, you know, trying to move away from a transactional view of an organization to a transformational view. What do we need to do to our culture to get us to move from a transactional mindset where we're just thinking about all the minutiae day to day and step out of that and look more strategically at how can we transform our organization? And that really boils down to a lot of awareness of the principles of asset management.
Well, I'm glad you brought up the awareness of those principles. What are those principles?
James, I mentioned earlier the international standard ISO 55000, in which 31 countries participated. And if we look to ISO 55000 for guidance on what are the principles of asset management, the standard identifies four core principles. I've already touched on the first one, which is value. I spent some time talking about value, and that's definitely one of the four principles. The other three are alignment, leadership, and assurance. And we could speak for hours on what is meant by alignment, leadership, and assurance. And I'll try to provide examples of those other three and the value core principle as we move through your remaining questions.
All right. Excellent. Perfect. So now that we have those key principles, how does an organization start implementing asset management? I think it may start with the leadership or the alignment through the organization, but I'll let you answer that.
I think people need to realize that it's a journey, not a destination, and we need to start somewhere. There are some organizations that get concerned about embarking upon an asset management journey. They feel that they're not ready for it, or they don't have data that's sufficiently rigorous, or they may not feel they have a competent team, but not correct. They can start wherever they are. They've got to recognize that there are maturity assessments that one can be done, a gap analysis to identify where you are on the journey relative to best-in-class practices from other organizations and international and national and local standards. So get to know where you are on the roadmap relative to best practices through a gap analysis. The gap analysis will then sort of articulate your current state, where are you now, will help you think about your desired future state that you want to get to. How close to best practice do you want to be? And what is the roadmap in between? How are you going to get from point A, your current state, to point B, your future state? And that's all about, the roadmap is like your transitional state. How are you going to transition over time? And the roadmap should include, would typically include in a gap analysis, a suite of improvement initiatives, prioritized initiatives that the organization can think about taking upon, looking at those initiatives that might be easier to implement, other initiatives may be harder to implement. So break it down. Break down all the initiatives into those that are more critical for short-term implementation, those perhaps for medium-term and longer-term. So break it down into a roadmap of bite-sized, prioritized chunks, if you will.
Excellent. Now, once they understand that those gaps, what is critical for an organization to be successful in asset management?
Commitment from top management, whatever top management may be, depending on the kind of organization, the people at the top need to be committed. If they're not committed, then it is not going to succeed. And any change management process is going to look at the role of top management in influencing, if you will, the culture and the success factors in the asset management journey. So getting the buy-in, the awareness, the understanding of top management is absolutely essential. The leadership team, if you will.
Excellent. Now, when organizations start to look at that gap analysis and start working towards closing those gaps, they may come across different frameworks, ISO 55001, PAS 55, there's the Global Forum on Maintenance and Asset Management Landscape. What's the difference between those, and is there one an organization should be focusing on?
My short answer to that question will be there's not much of a difference. They're all based on good common sense. There's a lot of similarities between each one. They may have a slightly different focus. PAS 55 was focused more towards the boots on the ground level of the organization, the people in the field, whereas ISO 55000 tends to lean more towards top management. So the principles are consistent. The scope of them might be a little bit different. I think what's important to realize that ISO 55000, PAS 55, and many others are really guides about the why you should do it and the what you should do. But they don't get into how. There are other standards such as the IIIM manual, the International Infrastructure Management Manual, that starts to dig deeper into the how of the implementation of asset management.
Excellent. That's very good to indicate that these standards and these references that you mentioned are the high level what, why, but they don't give you the tactical how do you actually implement this, how do you do that, because that's so different across every organization and every asset class. Now, that IIIM is something I've never heard of, so that is definitely something I'm going to have to look into to get a better understanding of what it is and how it works with these other standards that are there.
Definitely. In fact, most of my clients in the organizations I work with have the IIIM manual as a binder on their desktop rather than ISO 55001. ISO 55000 is a fantastic framework, but it's really high-level aspirational concepts. The IIIM manual gives you good practical tools and techniques for implementation of those strategic principles.
This podcast is brought to you by Iridicio. Be sure to check out Iridicio's IBL Blended Learning for Maintenance and Reliability Professionals. This SMRP-accredited project-based curriculum will take you through all aspects of a maintenance and reliability program and provides you with all the tools you need to generate a 30 times return on investment for your organization and a set of credentials from the University of Tennessee for you. You can find out more at ibltraining.com. Now, ISO 55000 being that standard, I've seen adoption in you know, Australia, New Zealand, some in Europe. Why hasn't it seen wide adoption here in North America? Or is it, and we're just not certifying organizations yet against it?
Yeah, I think you've answered the question right there. I believe that there is wide adoption. It depends on how we define adoption. If adoption means organizations recognize that it has, that the standard has merit and they should pursue the principles in the standard through alignment, of trying to align themselves with the standard, then we definitely have that happening quite extensively across North America. But we need to distinguish between an organization that's seeking alignment rather than an organization that's seeking certification. You know, I'm not fully qualified to speak to the question of certification, but my sense is that at this time, the regulators in North America have not yet taken the same approach that they have in other parts of the world, well, certainly in certain industries, to compel organizations to seek certification to confirm that they conform to the standard. But I think that's coming. I think we're going to see, similar to ISO 9000, we're going to see certifications increasing in North America. That's the word out on the street from the experts in the industry.
That's what I'm hearing as well. A lot of organizations are aligning themselves with it, but they're not going after a certification yet. They're preparing for it. Some industries and clients that I've talked to and had conversations with, they work for government. They get government contracts, and that is something they can see coming down the pipeline from a government standpoint of, you have to have this before we start giving you these contracts and stuff like that. That's what I'm hearing. Haven't confirmed it. Haven't been able to get actual evidence of it, but that's what I'm hearing as well. But with that, I hear a contradicting view from some organizations that state, you know, the ISO 55001 certification is just a tick box exercise. Do you believe that to be true?
No. I mentioned four core principles earlier. One of them was assurance. Certification to the standard, validated by an impartial, independent third party, will demonstrate effectively, if you will, to regulators and shareholders that it will give them, it will give those regulators, shareholders, and other stakeholders assurance or peace of mind that the organization is actually truly committed and enforcing and continuing to embed in the organization asset management principles. You know, they say one can't be judge, jury, and executioner all at the same time and all wear those same hats. I don't think an organization can truly, without independent third-party verification, state that it is fully compliant with the standard.
Yeah, I would have to agree. There's a lot of assurance, like you mentioned, that independent third party provides. They have experience generally in other industries, other aspects of asset management that organization does not. And they provide that outside perspective. Did you consider this? You know, this, you're doing a good job at this, but you need to make this part a little more robust, if you will. I think it's definitely not a tick-the-box exercise, in my opinion. Like you said, it provides that assurance to regulators, shareholders, and so on and so forth, that they actually are doing what they need to be doing. Now, we've talked quite a bit about asset management. Are there any other thoughts on asset management you want to share with our listeners?
Yeah, thoughts about asset management. I think, no, other than I just want to underscore a few quick points. Firstly, asset management is not about an ideal that we work in a constrained environment. It actually, I believe I'm a pragmatic asset manager, recognizing depending on the size of the organization I'm working with. If I'm working with a small organization, I'm not going to bring them gold-plated solutions. A lot of people criticize consultants and asset managers, saying that we want to boil the ocean and scorch the earth, we come to a new client organization and want to turn everything upside down on its head, completely dismantle everything and reassemble everything. And I think that's not what asset management is about. It's recognizing about introducing change incrementally in a way that recognizes the culture of the organization. You know, there's a fantastic saying from Peter Drucker, I believe, who said that culture eats strategy for breakfast. So I want the message, I think, there is recognize you can come in with great strategies and you want to like kill the ocean and scorch the earth and turn everything upside down and change everything. But that's crazy nonsense. Asset management will fail if you try to pursue it that way. You've got to recognize and build upon what your organization has already done. Fair enough. There are some organizations that may be doing a lot of things wrong, but we need to move from that current state to what is considered to be a realistic future state. Asset management is not rocket science. It's actually common sense. That's the crazy thing about it, is that it's really just common sense applied. But we as human beings, you know, we struggle with common sense. We're told, eat healthily, exercise regularly, and do all these wonderful things to keep us in good shape. But look how we struggle with that common sense. It's the same with our organizations. We just have to recognize that we're human beings, and we need to recognize that we're coming into an organization that's made up of people and processes and systems and assets. Assets are only one piece of that puzzle. There's people, processes, systems, and assets. And we want to get that integration right.
Excellent. Yep. Very, very good. We're not out there to change everything. We're out there to make those incremental changes, drive the cultural change, because that's what's going to sustain the program. We can provide all the tactical activities, but if the culture is not there, asset management will not survive. Now, with that, what is the one thing you think makes the biggest difference to being successful during an asset management implementation? And I say implementation in the way of starting that journey.
I mentioned that quote, culture eats strategy for breakfast. Well, my answer to your question would be strategy needs to invite culture to breakfast, so that the strategy recognizes the culture of the organization and what's going to be required to change that culture and how realistic that's going to be and how much time that's going to take.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Having that change management program in place behind that strategy, communicating, creating awareness, creating the desire to change, all those things are needed to make it successful in the long run. Now, over your span of 15 plus years with asset management, you've probably seen a lot of asset management programs. If you had a magic wand, what would be the one thing you would change in most of the programs you have seen? Is there a consistent theme you see going on that you would like to see changed or improved?
That's a very difficult question, and I don't think I have a good answer for that. I'll try. I think having worked with many organizations of different sizes, you're working with stakeholders, and each stakeholder has a different perception on how value is realized from the organization's assets. So I think when you say that something to change, it's really change human behavior in terms of human beings who represent different stakeholder groups to try not to be selfish in their own vested interests and think about the organization as a whole, or think about the triple bottom line and how they as one stakeholder are just one of many stakeholders. The problem is when talking with a particular stakeholder, whether it be an environmental regulator or a safety regulator or the local community or contractors or consultants or bankers and financiers or warranty underwriters, each of them has a tremendously valuable, important role in the overall mix, but they each have some selfish vested interests. And if people can remove that filter from their lens and think about the bigger good, if you will, of the organization, that would be the one ideal. Is help people to act rationally rather than emotionally is maybe the way I would sum it up. But that's a very tall order. That's asking for a change to human nature.
Yes, that is definitely a tall order. That's why you have that magic wand. Now, what is the one action you want our listeners to take away from the conversation today?
This has been stated a lot in the literature and in social media recently. You know, asset management is not – there is a difference between managing assets and asset management. Managing assets, one can simplify perhaps by saying it's about what we do to an asset, whereas asset management is about what we receive, what we get, what we realize from our assets. It goes back to my value comments at the outset of this discussion. So I think I want people to realize that we're trying to move from an asset-centric view into a value-focused view of asset management. And in order to do so, we need to bring critical thinking skills to the table. I know this all sounds very academic and pedantic, but you know what? It can be translated down into thinking about, why am I performing this maintenance task on this asset? What is the value of that task? Ask that the why question. Who's benefiting from it? What happens if we perform maintenance on a different interval or to a different level of rigor? So all the way down to the boots on the ground, the guy or the gal who's talking a bolt on a piece of equipment, understanding the why. And they're working on the asset. They're doing something to the asset. But the reason they're doing something to the asset is so that stakeholders can realize something from that asset. And I think that's the one important message, is people can see that line of sight between managing assets and asset management, or the line of sight between what's happening with the boots on the ground all the way up to the C-suite in the organization, or the line of sight between what I do today on my young asset and how that lines forward into, as my asset ages, what I do during the midlife and old age of my asset. So thinking of alignment and value is, how do we realize value over the different stages of the life of an asset? How do we realize value at different levels of an organization?
Yeah, I think that's very good. Bringing that wider perspective, understanding those things, and that really would make a difference in implementing asset management, driving it forward, and so on and so forth. Now, David, where can people find out more about you? Are you going to be at any events later this year, presenting any webinars, or where can people find your great post on LinkedIn?
IMC conference, and possibly also at the IAM conference in London in November. I'm going to be putting forward an abstract there. I do post from time to time in social media. I'm a visual thinker. I like pictures. They help me. I love it when I can pull together a concept visually and share it and see the aha in other people. So I do post visuals in social media that I call visualize asset management in order to visionize the team. So I feel that if people can visualize these concepts, and I've used a lot of very high-level, fancy, highfalutin academic concepts in this podcast, but those things do translate into very practical, concrete actions that people do every day in organizations, and if people can visualize that, then they can be visionized towards the organization's goals and mission and objectives.
Excellent. And I'll provide a couple of links to some of those visuals that you put up on LinkedIn, because they are very helpful. They help you to understand the concept because they are visual, not academic-y, if you will. Now, before we go, do you have any resources you want to share with our listeners? What's the best book that they can get on asset management? Is there a good website, organization, so on and so forth?
You know, there's a lot of literature available for free on the internet from a variety of associations and organizations. I would rather not mention specific ones, but there are you search. The listeners just search for asset management. There is a mountain of fantastic material out there. A lot of it is free. I know that a lot of people struggle these days to plow their way through books. I'm included as well. I like to read more shorter pieces. I cannot point your listeners, James, to any one particular favorite resource. I don't believe I have one favorite. I do like to try to get insight from different resources. So I will say, just to close this up, for your listeners who might be interested, there are really a number of centers around the world for asset management. In Australia and New Zealand, and in that sort of Australasia part of the world, you have the Asset Management Council. And they have a wonderful body of knowledge about asset management and a lot of journals and articles and their own conferences. In the UK and in Europe, you've got the Institute of Asset Management. And they publish a lot of materials. In North America, you've got AMP, you've got CNAM, you've got PMAC, you've got a lot of organizations centered on North America, trying to bring the North America perspective to asset management. So I think, though, there is consistency whether you go and look at the literature published by the folks in Australasia or the folks in Europe or the folks more closer to our home here in North America. All the principles are the same. There might be more practical applications recognizing regional differences. For example, here in British Columbia, where I am, earthquake preparedness is very important. Some parts of the world, climate change adaptation is a very important consideration. So it really depends on where you are in the world to look at how the principles, the universal principles of asset management are being applied in different regions.
No, that's very good, because there is those consistencies between everything, like you said, so those regional differences. But that's 100% what asset management is understanding those organizational differences, that organizational context, and adopting the asset management framework to work for that organization. Well, David, I want to thank you for taking time out of your busy day to have a conversation around asset management with us today. I definitely learned some new things, and I'm definitely going to go exploring a little bit today after this to learn a bit more about some of the things you mentioned. So thank you very much for your time.
And thank you, James. Thank you for the opportunity and for your efforts to put out the message and to just raise awareness in the community out there. I think that's tremendous. Kudos to you.
Well, thank you very much. I would like to thank you for listening and remind you that you can always find out more on maintenance, reliability, and asset management at www.iridicio.com and by following our blog. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is a proud member of the Reliability.fm network. I'd like to ask you to please rate and review this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. It ensures the podcast stays relevant and is easy to find by like-minded professionals. It is only with your ratings and reviews that the Rooted in Reliability podcast can continue to grow. I thank you for providing this small but critical support. We'll see you next week when we dive into another burning topic with Rooted in Reliability, your plant performance podcast.